Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. In the spirit of people working in the amicable divorce field, we have yet another lovely person from just outside of London, England. We have Polly Bloom. Hello, Polly.
Hello, Judy. Nice to be here.
Thank you. And I was so happy to meet you. I met you over Instagram. I loved your posts. I also loved your name, Polly Bloom. Made me feel really good when I saw it and heard it. I bet people love your name.
Yes, they do. And that's the idea. I want the bloom is the prominent part, because when people have been through a breakup in their relationship, they can feel like they've withered, and so I want to help those struggling with their emotions to bloom again.
I love that. It's such a lovely concept, Polly. Such a wonderful
Thank
concept.
You.
And I found with Polly, like with so many people that are in the divorce business, there's a personal reason why they got into the business. And it's always to do good for those going through that experience. Even in the most amicable situations, wouldn't you agree, Polly? It's still tough.
It is. It's an awful process. And I didn't realize quite how awful it was until I went through the process myself.
Let's share a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a relationship, married for 27 years. I knew my ex in total for over 30 years. I met him quite young. And I was a normal housewife, bringing up my daughters. And I thought that we had a lovely, lovely life. And I foresaw my future was growing old with him, but he had a totally different agenda. And as I found out, he had been having many affairs and all over the years of marriage, all in the workplace. And it was, for me, it was shocking. I was confused, bewildered. I mean, the tsunami of emotions that you go through is just vast. You feel obsolete, you know, you're powerless, you feel embarrassed. You feel like you've got no sense of purpose anymore, because I was at the age where my daughters were early 20s and flown the nest. So not only had my daughters gone, but also my husband.
Oh my. In the period of how long, two daughters, right? Or three?
Yes, two.
Two daughters. So the second one leaves home. What was the time frame between that and you finding out that the marriage was not going to continue?
Well, they were still with me. They were studying at college and university. So they had been living away, but their studies were coming to an end. So they're coming back home before then, striving out on their career path. So it sort of happened, found out a lot about my ex, and in the sort of middle, the girls were then moving out. But because I had to sell the matrimonial home, where I moved to, didn't suit my daughters either. So it was a case of considering my future more than considering theirs, because they had their partners. They were one day going to be, you know, moving in with them. So I had to be quite selfish, I suppose, in one way, but consider my future. I mean, I was 50. I just turned 50 when this happened to me.
You know, that's really a tough age because, first of all, it's not a tough age in life. It's actually a beautiful time in life. Yes. Because you're at a certain point where you've learned a lot about life and you can move forward with a little more wisdom. But when your life does an about face in a way that you never expected, you're on your own as opposed to preparing for 10 to 15 years retirement and a lovely life of maybe travel and relaxation.
Yes, you put so much into bringing up your family and certain things, you know, you put on hold because, you know, your children do come first, you know, with what their needs are. That doesn't mean to say that you can't do nice things.
Right.
You do nice things with family, but once they've grown and flown the nest, then you can do all those things together that you haven't been able to do with your partner due to the work commitments and family commitments. And I must admit, Judy, you know, I did think at first, you know, I was worried about getting to 50 and maybe putting on a little weight, but I never ever thought that I would be single at 50. It just didn't even feature in my thinking.
No,
and so I had a lot of reassurance from lovely people in my life who would say, you're still young. Luckily you found out now, you've still got time on your side. But I must admit at the beginning, I didn't feel quite like that. I felt like, you know, that I was in the latter half of my life, and who would be interested in a woman of my age, you know, if I wanted to find a companion. But you know, that I realise now was quite negative thinking, because as I've discovered, there is so much that you can do, so long as your mindset is such that you are open to trying new things, new hobbies, meeting new people. Anything is possible. Age is just a number.
You know, I completely agree with that. And a couple things came to mind as you were talking. You know, first of all, you ended a 27-year chapter in your life. That is an enormous chapter. That's a little over a quarter of a century. So that's a very big deal. Number two, something I learned interviewing other people from England, and that is there's no such thing as spousal support or alimony in England, is there, like there is in the United States?
Well, actually, in my particular situation, I did get spousal maintenance.
Because I learned differently.
Well, I don't know, because maybe it was the timing of when I divorced. Maybe the law has changed since. I really don't know. You know, I'm a divorce coach. I don't advise on finance or the legal side of divorce, but I could only speak from my own personal experience, and I had through the negotiation 50% of my ex's pension, and I also got 50% of the property or of our assets, and then it was agreed that he would pay spousal maintenance till I reached retirement age, which is 67 in the UK.
All right. Well, that's not, maybe the law did change. Who knows? Because I spoke to other people where they said they didn't, but that's fine and that's good.
I think it can depend on also, Judy, the length of time you're married. I think that could come into it.
I bet.
Also, if you are married, because some people obviously break up and they need to divide things, but they're not actually, married.
We call it common law.
Common law.
Yeah. And it's not a law in every state. It's not in California, but common law is recognized in other states. Yeah, so you're together, you're not married, but you present yourself as a unified couple.
Yes.
And if there are children, you present yourself as a family.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So with all of that, and with the divorce and coming out of it, you became a divorce coach.
Yes.
which is lovely. Talk about that. How did that metamorphosis take place?
Well, as a person, I like to help people. And over the years, people seem to gravitate towards me. They want to share their experiences over certain things that are going on in their life. And I did work with children in a school as a learning mentor. And that was helping children with special educational needs and also children that were unhappy because of their home lives, which 9 out of 10 times was due to the fact that their parents had gone separate ways and the children were finding it very difficult to cope with emotionally. So I had that involvement. And then when the divorce happened for myself and my daughters, I realized, it took me a while because obviously it takes a while to get over the roller coaster of emotions that you go through, and to get yourself back on track, that takes a while. And then one morning I woke up and thought, I really would like to help other women go through this. I found the process. I managed to get some help from a psychologist, which was great. That therapy was, so important. But I thought, wouldn't it be good if somebody was out there that you could go to, and who'd been through the whole process themselves, so could understand each and every step. And also how somebody would be feeling. Because, so many people would say, you should be over it by now. Why aren't you over it? But if they don't get it, then they don't understand. They can't step into your shoes and go through the grieving process. As human beings, we all grieve differently. And a divorce is second to the death of a loved one. So there is the loss cycle that you have to go through. So if you've got somebody like myself to guide you, you don't feel so alone. I'm on the phone 24/7. So whatever time of day they feel rotten, if I can't speak to them, I will get back to them, because you go up and down, and you just, I think from my own experience, I didn't know which way to turn and how to dial down the intense feelings I was going through.
And you really, at a certain point, I think, cannot keep talking to your family and friends. There is a point where they are oversaturated with your grief, with your experience, yet you still need an outlet.
You do. But also through the coaching, it does teach you to sort of limit that. Of course, have your duvet days to start with. If you don't want to face the world, don't. But it's important not to stay down there for too long and wallow in self-pity or wallow in your story. And one of the strategies I ask my clients to think about is to count how many times they may tell their story during the day, and then to say, well, tomorrow I won't tell my story 10 times. I'll make sure I only tell my story 8. So bit by bit you diminish over a period of time, it being so prominent in the forefront of your mind.
Right. And so that's so interesting, because when we tell our stories, first of all, we tell them to ourselves ad infinitum in our own brains, right?
Yes. Definitely, Judy.
So there's that, and then there's saying it to other people. So when you are coaching people, do you address how many times you tell your story to yourself during the day? Is that you address?
Funny enough, I remember telling myself on one particular occasion, as I stepped out this door to meet friends for an evening meal, that I was not going to talk about it. I told myself, and then halfway through the evening, there I go again talking about my situation. I used to come home feeling so cross with myself, thinking, oh, why did I do that? However, you shouldn't berate yourself. This is part of the process, you know. And definitely with time, it does diminish. One day you wake up and think, oh, do you know what? I haven't actually thought about that today. I haven't thought about him today.
Yes.
Then you know you are healing.
Yes. I also wanted to interject when you were talking about grief. So in therapy, there are 5 stages of grief when you're dealing with a physical death. But yes. In divorce, there are 7 stages of grief. There are 2 more stages of grief because unlike death, that person is still living.
Yes.
You may have to deal with that person in a co-parenting situation. Exactly. You might still see your ex at social events that are either family events or somehow involve your children and grandchildren. So there are a lot of stages of grief we have to go through.
And that's the hardest. If you are co-parenting, that is very hard to deal with, and that is part of the strength you have to dig deep for inside of you. And a lot of that is to do with how you decide to communicate. And it's actually changing your mindset and trying not to be drawn into any arguments. And disagreements. And sometimes you might be in a relationship with somebody who is of a high conflict nature. We spoke about this, Judy, about high conflict personalities and the author, Bill Eddy.
BIF method, brief, informative, yes. Friendly, yes. And firm.
Yeah.
It really works.
It is excellent advice. And if you can follow that format, I'm not saying it's easy at all, but if you can use that as a model, then you can, reduce the conversation that you have with somebody that might always be attacking you verbally.
Absolutely. And I want to interject at this point for the listeners. Bill Eddy, Eddy, lives in San Diego, California, but is world renowned within the legal therapy and mediation community because he's written 24 books, most of them on how to deal with high conflict personalities. There's a 2-part interview with him on this podcast, January of this year, 2020, and this BIF method for anybody who wants to use it, and you can read about it in his books. When you're dealing with a high conflict personality, you cannot argue with them. It is just a waste of time. You will not win. But if you can get yourself set up for the communication piece of it to be very brief in your response, because you will be engaged in communication for various reasons, be very brief in your response, be informative in terms of what your position is on the issue you're dealing with, be friendly, do not criticize, do not be condescending, do not be judgmental, but be firm in that you don't change your position, whatever that is. And his books are absolutely brilliant. So thank you for bringing that up
Today,
Polly. Thank you. Now let's go to you as a divorce coach. Everybody has their philosophies that they bring to the table, their approaches that they bring to the table. And you have some wonderful approaches that I would love for you to share as a divorce coach. So please, let's do that now.
Okay. So what, Judy, you're asking me to talk about the different techniques?
As a coach, you have a philosophical position, and there are certain aspects that people need to deal with that you help them. One of them is communication. You said that a lot. And communication is very key in getting through a divorce.
Yes. Yeah.
How do you deal with that with your clients?
Well, it's actually saying to them, you know, if they were to receive an email on a Friday evening, don't open that email. Leave it, because it could be something that will upset you for your entire weekend. So it's choosing, it was taking back control. And not being rushed to make decisions. I think so many people feel that they have to go to the solicitor, they have to get the financial advisor. And if they've had somebody in their relationship that was slightly controlling or pressurizing, then they see that email and panic. Give yourself 24 hours, a day's grace before responding. So like I said, if the email comes on a Friday evening, say, right, it's the weekend, we're out, you know, office is closed, can't do anything about whatever's in that email until I'm ready on Monday, say, evening.
Well, what if you're in a co-parenting situation, though, and maybe the kids have to be picked up or something going on, a little different?
That is different, but I would choose your source of communication. I would have only one. So if you decide that you correspond through email or text, or if it's through a letter, but I would definitely, or by the telephone, but I would definitely choose one medium of communication.
That's smart. You know, that's smart because, first of all, we are swallowed up in communication vehicles, whether it's the phone, text, email, Instagram now people are communicating on. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is. And that's another medium that's very upsetting, you know, like social media, Facebook. I would also advise my clients to have some willpower and not look at social media, because that can change your mood within an instant. And social media is used to project such happy images, and everybody's having a wonderful time. And that's not necessarily true of life. But if you're feeling miserable because you're missing your partner and he's gone off with another woman who may be years younger than you, you know, or you feel prettier than you, you know, because we all beat ourselves up that we're not good enough. That is definitely one of the first of many feelings when you find out about an affair. So You'll see an image on social media and it will just make you feel miserable. So it's self-harming. So it's best to not even go there. Look at your children if you want, you know, look at your friends. But if you are, you know, still associated to friends, I would limit what I look at, because it's just too upsetting.
Well, I interviewed an attorney, I believe, last year. She's a millennial, and she has mostly millennial clients. She was saying that first of all, going on social media and exposing your private life can truly come back to haunt you if you're in a litigated situation in the midst of the divorce, and even post-divorce if you're co-parenting and there are lingering issues. So she said, no, it's social media is being brought into the courtroom now and can be very damaging.
Oh, it's interesting to know, actually.
Yeah, so there's that. And then you said something when we were talking last week, and you said, as opposed to feeling less than, as opposed to feeling less desirable than whomever your ex is dealing with, you turned that around into a series of positives. And here's what you said, and I really loved it, Polly. You said, I want to help you blossom again. I want to help you blossom, Polly Bloom. I want to help you blossom to believe in yourself again, to love yourself, to be optimistic about the future, to be open to new opportunities, and this will allow you to move forward because that is what you have to do. That is what life requires us to do.
Definitely, yes.
Comment on all of that. Have you always been this type of person?
Well, I think I must have been, but I've never had the opportunity to realize this until my divorce. I've always challenged myself. You know, I've always tried new things. And I've frankly was devastated when I was hit by the news of my ex's many affairs. But I thought, I can't let this define me. It's how you react to something, not what happens to you that defines you, is how you react to it. So, you know, there's so many different phrases of sink or swim, fight or flight. And I just thought, I am not going to let one person make me ashamed of what has happened and stops me in my tracks. I'm not going to let any one person do that to me.
So I love this, that you said this. It's not what happens to you that defines you, but how you react to those challenges. And I love that for two reasons. Inherent in that are the seeds of forgiveness, because if you think that way, that sets you up to free yourself from the control that heartache and hurt do to you. They take you out of your false sense of security about control if that other person was making you feel like you had control over life. Your control is really what's inside of you and your ability to react to something that you just simply didn't see coming that rocks your world, yes?
And yet, Judy, the other important point is that you cannot control the way another person thinks. You cannot control another person's actions. And as soon as one realizes that, it can change your whole thought process. Once you think, why are you sort of getting angry over this person? They've done it. You can't change it. There is the problem, or the problem lies with them. They have something in them that they obviously don't feel complete. There's something missing in them that they need to have many affairs. I mean, I'm not saying every divorce ends up with someone having an affair.
But a lot do,
yes.
Right.
And another book that I read, which early days, which also gave me a great inspiration, was a book by Sue Jeffers called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. And one of the chapters talks about how you can handle anything that comes your way, so long as you tell yourself this. So when something makes you feel vulnerable or you're afraid to deal with it, clarity is so important. So don't be afraid of it. You know, zip up your Teflon suit and face it. Because once you face a problem, once you face a fear, it is behind you. It's no longer a fear. And every time, Judy, I came up against something that made me feel quite anxious or unsure, I thought of what Sue Jefferson said and I faced it. And that every time I got stronger and stronger and stronger.
And in something, this is great, and something else you said that's so common with women who have been on the other side, on the betrayed side, so to speak, of infidelity. Not that it doesn't hurt men too. You know, no. Women do commit infidelity almost as much as men do. So I'm not down on men. I am not.
No.
But since you do deal with women, I wanted to extend a thought that you shared, and that is, when you find out that your husband has committed infidelity, you really look at yourself as less than whomever he's with. And that does start defining you. And that has to be addressed. It's normal.
Definitely.
Right? But it has to be addressed because, strangely enough, and I'm here in Hollywood, where plastic surgeons are as prevalent as your manicurist. You know, we all have our go-to hair colorists, manicurists, and plastic surgeons, right?
Yes.
Youth is the name of the game here in Hollywood. And it's so easy to compare yourself to other women. But what I learned since I moved here in 1989 is you could be the most glamorous woman walking the face of the earth. That doesn't mean that your significant other isn't going to walk outside of the relationship. It really doesn't have to do with how you look.
Not at all. I agree with you. I think for some men, it's all about the chase. It's boredom. They like the excitement. And I do think that it's to do with ego. So it's whoever's there at the right time. I don't think it's necessarily, as you said, to do with the fact that they no longer find you attractive as their wife. I think it's something that's missing within them, that there's a void that they need to fill. And with people like my ex, his appetite is insatiable. He will never be satisfied. And actually, I can feel a bit sorry for him.
Well, that's a tough road to hoe. That is, whenever we have an insatiable appetite for anything, you know, that it's difficult for us to harness that self-control.
Yes.
But this is something that is problematic to an ongoing relationship, though.
Yes, yeah. So
unless you have a different philosophy about relationships,
no.
By the way, some people do. They do. Little did I realize until I got into this business, the stories that you hear. Okay, so Pam, you said, and it's true, isn't it? The stories that you hear, it's
yes,
an amazing
yes.
portrait of life.
Yes,
we get on a daily basis.
Yeah. It makes me feel quite sad. You know, in some ways that this seems to be very prevalent now.
Right. But okay. So, but you are a very positive person and I really, really like that. So you also said that you work 24/7. Well, you do
yes.
sleep though. You don't,
yes.
you don't answer your phone in the middle of the night, do you?
Well, it's, it is on so that people can contact me. But most people are respectful and would say that can wait till the morning. You know, I think, even though I offer that they can, but it doesn't happen very often.
Okay, so when you take a client on, do you meet? Well, I know we have COVID, so we'll just put this in a normal world when we can actually come in contact with people. So the plan is that you meet in person sometimes. Do you do like a once or twice a month, and then phone calls? How does it work with you?
Yes. Well, first of all, if the client contacts me by phone, we have an initial conversation, which is for 20 minutes, half an hour, which is free. And then if they decide they want to proceed with coming to see me, then it's usually the first session would be about an hour or an hour and 15 minutes as I get to know them and their background and the story to why they're sitting with me. They can book in for one session, depending on where they are at, if they're pre-separation, you know, middle of it or post, they can have as many sessions as they require or desire. Some people might only are happy with one session. So it's entirely up to the client, although I would say that for us to deal with so many different aspects to the divorce, it's going to take more than one session.
Right. So do you work on an, you don't have to say what you charge, but do you work on an hourly rate and maybe a flat fee or just hourly?
Hourly. If I can offer them four sessions at a discounted rate.
Okay.
If they want to book in for a block of sessions. And more recently, because what I've realized, Julia, there's quite a few people who are, because of COVID, are struggling in their relationships. But also because of COVID, they might have lost their job or they're furloughed. So money is tight. So I've now offered a group session online.
Ah,
so that
that's great.
I'm the host, so I can give the advice, but then the clients will not feel so alone because there'll be six people in total, and everyone can have a little chat. But it's not too wallow. It's not too just go round and round and round, over and over and over their stories. It's about talking, but also at the same time getting help from myself, meeting other people, making friends, but also it's financially cost of, you know, financially for them.
Right. And what I've learned, I was never big on group sessions until I really listened to a lot of professionals who host these sessions talk, and then all of a sudden I realized that when we're around people going through a similar situation, it's different than talking to our friends and family who may not be dealing with this at all. And we can learn from each other, and we can use each other's examples of what worked for them.
Yeah. Yes.
And then we find we're not alone in our own feelings, right? Because we can feel very isolated with our feelings.
Yes.
Unless we talk about them, but in the right form, in the right context, for help, for a positive change.
I think a lot of people find it very difficult to talk and open up. So some people wouldn't like a group session, but because this is... When I was talking to some clients and they said that they couldn't afford my sessions, I want to help, Judy. That's what I want to do. I really do not like the feeling of people struggling alone. and fearful of what direction to go in. So I just thought this was a great medium through Zoom that they don't even have to leave the security and comfort of their own home. So they feel safe in that environment. And like you just said, if they are willing to share and talk, they're meeting other people that are in a similar situation. I mean, everybody's story is unique to them. Everybody's story is different as to how they've come to be separated and divorced. But just by sharing, it can make you feel less fearful.
Yes, absolutely, and less isolated.
Yes.
In terms of the areas that you deal with in your coaching, yes, communication, I understand from you, is key. And I talk about that a lot in my own practice as a mediator and when I'm filing. So I file for both people in what is called an amicable situation, yes, meaning that they want to talk the settlement through. They don't want to go to court. It's an option they have, and have a judge make the decisions. It doesn't necessarily mean that they agree on everything. And I find the communication is the thing that everybody struggles with, because they're not together as a unit anymore, and they don't even know how to communicate with each other in this new and unique relationship of uncoupling.
Yes.
So when you're dealing with people, what are the areas that you talk about other than communication? Do you talk about how to get through the legal process on a human level?
Yes, I mean, one of the first things that I talk about to my clients is their support group. And clarity is key. So again, they can get advice, free advice, initial advice from a solicitor, and in turn from a financial advisor. They then need the support of a good, trusted friend. I would suggest that they maybe see their GP or somebody, and somebody like myself or a therapist. So it's to get that support behind them. You know, it's really tricky at the beginning because there's a lot at stake, and clients are in the thick fog, not knowing which direction to go in. And I always say sometimes the partner that has, the jilter, has usually decided they want to leave 6 months, a year before you find out. So by the time you receive the news, they've moved on already, but you're left in shock.
Right, you're left starting the journey.
Yes,
they're well past you.
Exactly,
your journey's just starting.
So
yeah.
So you know, then your ex is putting pressure on you, because they want everything sorted. They want the house sold. They you know, want to take all their belongings out of the property. But you're still in this shock. So communication then is quite tricky, because there's someone pressurizing them, and they don't know, you know, you as the victim. Just trying to get your head around it all. So my advice is to, like I said about emails, do not feel pressurized. Tell your partner that you will think about things as and when you are ready.
And really, to be clear, it needs to be spoken, because the other person can't see from your vantage point while you're struggling. And it's, I think it's very important to just say, look, there's nothing I can do about your decision, but I need time to catch up. I need time to process this. I'm not trying to hold you up, that you are light years ahead of me right now. Yeah. And so please understand that I'm not going to be problematic to the process. I get that it's going to go forward, but I just can't move at your pace. I mean, something as simple as that needs to be said.
Yeah, that's all well and good. If you have a partner that is compassionate and has empathy.
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so.
So if you're with somebody that has, you don't recognize anymore, that you're cold and heartless, that's very hard to communicate, you know, to get across to them. They don't get it. So, well, what's your problem? Why aren't you sorting out the house? Why aren't you seeing the solicitor?
Biff, brief, informative, friendly, and firm.
Exactly.
Brief. I need time to catch up. Informative. You've had time, and so I don't know how much time. I'm thinking maybe several months. Brief, informative, friendly. Yeah. Not yelling, not criticizing. How could you? Yes. You horrible person. You don't do that. And firm, don't go back on it. Yeah. And you don't have to keep talking about it. They can keep giving you these emails.
Yeah.
And the
That's
only
what I learned, Judy, through mine. You know, at first, if an email popped up, to me, it was like there was where his name was, it was like there was a skull and crossbones. You know, I might
the meme, the emoji,
toxic, you know, poisonous sign. Yeah. And my, you know, I heart would miss a beat, and I'd find it difficult to breathe, because when I clicked on that, I was thinking, what is he going to be asking of me now? And I learned very early on that my energy is important for me if I'm going to be able to get up every day and get through this. And I looked at it as a food commodity, that every time I sat down to respond to his demands, more food was going out of my cupboard, meaning there was less for me, less for my daughters, less for my family and friends. And when I looked at it like that, it's like, no, you can wait, mate, because you've done this. I need time. Go away and I'll let you know when I'm ready. That's how I, because at first I was hyperventilating, panicking, anxious, thinking that, oh God, I've got to sit down. And I remember sitting down one day to compose a reply to his email. His email, which was passive aggressive. And I just thought, what am I doing? Why am I deciding that I had to reply to every single little point that he said? And if I can take anything from that going forward in my life, is with an email, a text, I don't do that anymore. I don't respond to every question that's asked of me. I only respond to what I think's relevant and necessary. And I think that's a really good lesson to take forward when dealing with, you know, high conflict personalities.
Right. And it's not that you want to be passive aggressive yourself or overtly aggressive. It's really self-preservation.
It is. Yes.
You really need to do what's right and healthy for you. Yes, you know you have to participate in this process. That participation isn't going to go away.
Yes.
Maybe when the legal process is engaged and you either have an attorney, a barrister, I guess in your language or in England, but you have a legal professional with you, there are timelines, there are time frames in which you have to respond if you want to be part of the process and and not provide conflict to the process. But on a daily basis, you don't have to allow those communications that are upsetting be dealt with immediately. You do have to deal with them in your own time, not to prolong, but to work within your own capacity. I guess that's it. To find out what your capacity is. And the other point you said that I thought was great, and that is you don't have to respond to every single issue.
No. And that like you said, Biff, if you follow that Biff format, then you are sticking to just the points. If they start being personal, it's so easy. If it's a criticism of you, it's so easy to get frustrated and annoyed and respond to that criticism. Don't, you know, it's let it go, because, you know, sticks and stones may break your bones, but they, you know, and that's what they know you. Your ex knows.
Oh, that's true. Where the vulnerable points are.
Press. Yeah. Yeah. And so they know that's going to irritate you. And annoy you, and they're looking forward to that response. So don't give it to them.
Yes, or not even to assume why they're doing what they're doing, but just to be able to say to yourself, "I will get to this. I will not ignore you. I can't do it now, though."
Yes.
And then this is the thing that I worry about people when I'm dealing with people, and that is I work during the day. I have an office. You know, I have normal office hours. I do not respond at night. And I do realize that when I'm calling people and emailing people, they are more than likely working. And so for them to be able to fold the response to even my emails back to me during the day, that's a lot to expect of people. I don't even mind if they don't respond till the evening when they get home. I almost want them to wait, and I'll read your response the next day. But do your work. Yes. Separate your work. Your work becomes your haven. Separate your work from your personal life, i.e. your divorce. So that you can have a balance. Never even talked about it that way until right now, Polly. What do you think?
Definitely. It's healthier. You know, you can deal with it like that better if you compartmentalize, like you just said, you split. This is my personal time. This is my work time. And this is when I deal with it. I mean, a lot of times, you know, when you're at work, you get an email from your solicitor or your ex. By the time you get home from work in the evening, you can't respond. You know, everyone's gone home. So then that is a point to say, well, okay, I'm in now. I'm home from work. This is my time and I shall deal with it when it suits me, when I've got free time the following day. But definitely don't let it encroach on your leisure time.
And to really know when that time is that's right for you to respond. I think getting that clarity and letting everybody know, look, I'm at work at these hours. I like to focus on what I'm doing. So I'm going to respond to your emails and calls at night, unless it's of a very sensitive nature, a very timely nature, then of course I will respond during the day. But I think that's important because, first of all, we need our safe havens. Our employers need to know that we're focusing on our work when we have the normal office situation. And that's almost perfect that we can't respond possibly while we're working, because to add that into our work environment, it will influence the way we work. We can't have that jeopardized.
You're quite right, because I was working in a school and we aren't, you know, as staff, we weren't allowed to have mobiles, you know, on or around us whilst in the classroom. So the only time that I could check my phone was at my, you know, morning break, at lunchtime. And at the start, I would check my phone, particularly when I needed to provide information to my solicitor. But it did then encroach on my mental health whilst at work. You know, depending on what was being asked of me, I would become quite anxious or desperate to sort that information out there and then, which I couldn't because I was at work.
Right, so, and that became the priority rather than work.
Yeah, so I made it a rule to, you know, note to self, don't look at your phone, or if you look at your phone, because obviously if my daughters needed to get hold of me, I needed to check that they were okay. But if I saw an email from my solicitor or from my ex, I, after a period of time, would ignore it because I knew it would upset me so much.
So here's an idea to people who are working with a legal professional, solicitor in England, attorney here. Maybe in the subject line of the emails, they could say if they actually needed to hear from you during the day, need to know now, as opposed to answer later.
That's a very good idea, actually, Judy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really thought about it until right now in this conversation. Yeah. But just to give people balance in their lives, I think maybe this is a good thing to think about and see if your legal professional can identify must know now versus go ahead and look at this at night. It allows you to create that balance so necessary that will benefit everybody in the divorce.
Yes. Okay. I mean, you know, if they're seeing somebody like myself, by my coaching, that will alleviate any anxieties that they are feeling.
That's right.
So those emails won't seem quite as bad, but I think that's a really good idea, actually.
Well, I'm going to start using it in my own practice because I actually never thought about it until right now. So thank you for this. Our time has come to an end, Polly.
Oh, it's gone so quickly.
It's been a wonderful time. For people to get in touch with you, do you work transatlantically?
Yes, of course. Yes. Yes.
So which medium would you like people, through which you would like people to contact you?
Well, they can email me or go through my website. So my website is www.divorceseparationcoach.co.uk.
And my say that one more time. Say it slowly. Say it one more time.
Okay. www.divorceseparationcoach.co.uk.
.co.uk. I'm getting used to that email address.
Yeah.
Okay, and the other way, Polly?
And by email, which is pb@divorceseparationcoach.co.uk.
So PB, acronym for Polly Bloom, at divorcecoach. Say that again. Divorce Separation Coach.
Coach.co.uk, yes.
.co.uk. Polly, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time that you took with us today.
Thank you so much, Judy, for having me on your podcast. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
And thank you. Thank you.
I can be some help to anybody that's struggling emotionally.
And you absolutely will. And I want to thank everybody for listening to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. If you would like to get in touch with me for any topic ideas for the podcast, you can reach me at Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy@constructiveuncoupling.com, or through my website, divorceresourceinc.com. Thank you so much, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.